It's time to catch up with our regular Canberra correspondent, Sarah Basford-Canal. She's the political correspondent for the Canberra Times. Good morning, Sarah.
Good morning, Jeff. Election, post-election.
Mate, what a weekend. Crazy, huh?
Absolutely. I think no one could have really expected it to sort of pan out the way it did, but here we are. And we've got a very different looking parliament for the 47th parliament, so exciting few years ahead.
Well, tell us a little bit about that makeup. Everybody seems to be going on about the teal candidates, but there's a little bit more to it than that. It's being sort of watered down a bit, the effect of, well, all the independents in their varied backgrounds and, of course, the green slide.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably one of the things that surprised most people on election night was the, the conversion from Queensland to Greensland. It's really not the place you would expect the Greens to be gaining seats, but it looks like they're going to win two lower house seats there. And they've got pretty good contest in another two seats as well, though it does look like those are sort of leaning more towards Labor at the moment. The Teals really had their wipeout as well. We kind of expected a few Teal independents to win over some of the Liberal moderates in the inner city seats, but we didn't quite expect as many to get through. We're looking at a crossbench now of potentially more than 10, certainly, but maybe up to 13. So it's a very, very unusual parliament. Probably for the first time in Australia's history, we have a crossbench that's really, it really does hold the seat of power, though ALP still might get in with that majority after all, but they're going to have to negotiate with some of these independents depending on certain bills that come through. And it's just very, very interesting period for politics in the next 3 years.
I haven't actually crunched the numbers yet, Sarah, but has the electorate done what the major parties couldn't do? And have we finally achieved gender equity in the in both houses?
We probably wouldn't call it quite parity. There's still obviously a lot more men than there are women in the lower house and upper house. But we definitely have a lot more women entering parliament this time around. And it's possibly part of, the sort of effect post Brittany Higgins and Grace Tame last year. Obviously, they made a big splash in politics and really, set the scene for Australia's own sort of reckoning with women in politics. We've seen quite a few women enter this parliament. Obviously, quite a few have lost their seats, but I think the overall net is a gain.
Well, the ones that have lost their seats or lost positions, like Christina Keneally, it's kind of being blamed on the actions of the blokes.
Yeah, definitely. And so in the case of Christina Keneally, it was, very widely criticised that she was being parachuted in by sort of the heads of the Labor Party, ignoring that, what the local constituents actually wanted. And that was obviously a very safe Labor seat, with Chris Hayes being there, having a 14% lead in the two-party preferred basis. But obviously we've seen that go against Christina Keneally, who was a senator in the last parliament, but will not be sitting on that Labor front bench after Saturday. So I think it marks another really big loss for her. I think she obviously lost the New South Wales premiership. She lost in a by-election in Bennelong a few years back, and now she's lost again. We're going to have a different Home Affairs Minister in this Labor government than what we were expecting originally.
Wow, that would appear to be a little bit career-ending in a way. And she's going to be missed. I mean, people in the Labor Party speak well of her.
Yeah, I mean, she's always been considered quite an impressive Labor candidate, Labor member, but she obviously hasn't quite won over her local electorate. And so the electorate in Sydney is Fowler. It's a very multicultural community, and she doesn't live very close to it, or didn't previously anyway. She lived in a very, in Sydney terms, it's about 2 hours to get from where she lived in Scotland Island in the Northern Beaches to Fowler, which is in Sydney's southwest. And so at the end of the day, the people chose, and they didn't want Christina Keneally, but I don't think it's the end of her political career. She's still quite young. She's still quite ambitious. So it's very possible she might end up with a ambassadorship or some sort of, nod to her.
Right,
she was expected to become a Home Affairs Minister, but we'll have to see where that goes in the coming months.
Well, yeah, if she's not going to miss out on a ride on the golden elevator.
No, we don't expect that anyway. She's not going to go away or sort of return to Sky News as a host. It's very possible she could get tapped on the shoulder and sent to one of the sort of key postings around the world that politicians often are put into over career diplomats. So it could be London, it could be Washington, and then there's a few other options there for her as well.
Now, some very common commentary that comes out about elections is that state politics doesn't really have an impact on federal politics. But with the WA slide, it would seem to be a little bit hard to maintain that argument.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because obviously WA... completely, it was a wipeout for Liberals there, even surprising most people with Ben Morton losing his seat as well in Tangney. But even though, Western Australian electorate seemed to go the way of the state election, it didn't quite happen in South Australia in the same way. The swing there isn't as drastic. So it's not necessarily always going to be a good indication. And I think that's why a lot of people just sort of assumed, assume that Western Australia is going to fall dramatically to Labor. But in the end, it did. And partially that would have been, people remembering the last few years. And specifically when, Scott Morrison initially started kind of going against the premiers and making it as this federal versus state political fight. And the people, I think, in Western Australia really appreciated that. Obviously, the Premier stood up to him, Mark McGowan, and the fact that the government also backed Clive Palmer in the federal court case probably didn't do any favours for Scott Morrison in the end.
Well, it didn't certainly do United Australia any favours in Western Australia either, despite spending millions on advertising over here. There really wasn't the same sort of impact or influence that United Australia Party had at the last election.
Yeah, exactly. And actually, at the last election, they didn't really have much influence either, despite spending $80 million. So this is the second federal election where they've outspent the major parties and really just the entirety of all the parties together, and still failed to win a single seat in the lower house. They might win potentially a Senate seat, though it doesn't look incredibly likely. But obviously their leader, Craig Kelly, who said he wanted to be Prime Minister, will not be getting his wish in this parliament anyway. It's just another reminder that even though, you might have lots of money and lots of cash to throw at advertising, it doesn't always equate to wins in politics. I think the Palmer United Party, as it used to be called, did have a pretty good election result in 2013, but I think that was also related to the mood. It was one of the first times that there was sort of an alternative to the major parties aside from the Greens, so obviously capturing that right-wing vote a bit more. But they haven't ever really delivered on all of their promises in the past, so for most people they're looking at it and sort of dismissing it. So ultimately those preferences went to Liberals, and the Liberals still weren't able to pick up seats, so wasn't a big swing at all towards them, despite the millions that Clive Palmer poured in.
And how's the wash-up been for you personally, Sarah? I mean, you went through the ring, you hung out with Albo for a week, and you did the ScoMo for a week, and then that last week of assessment, what's your view looking back? How do you think you handled that election, and what's your view looking forward of the new government?
Yeah, I mean, it's we were very, like I said, I think a lot of people were very quiet about what they expected to happen because of how the 2019 election went. I think it's just another, yet another reminder that the polls aren't always going to be their best indication because they're sort of looking at a national basis, and ultimately governments are won on a seats basis. So, despite looking quite similar in terms of the polling to the previous election, I think Albanese was a little bit in a little bit more of a favourable position. It didn't really matter at the end of the day because, if the coalition snapped up those marginal seats like they planned to, they would have won government. But Labor obviously pushed on and managed to sweep through and essentially claim what looks like will be a majority government, though it might still be a minority government. It might only be one or two seats short. So, I think it's been a very long 6 weeks. I think most people will think that. And I think we've been through a lot of ups and downs in terms of figuring out who's sort of going to be next in charge and wondering if Albanese is up to it and whether Scott Morrison will bulldoze his way through another miracle. But we've finally got to the point that we know we have a new government, and I think it's refreshing. It's exciting. There's going to be new ministers to talk to. We've obviously got a very different coalition than what we had before. They've lost a lot of the moderates. There's going to be a lot of soul searching within the party, and it sort of looks at this point like it's going to move more to the right, more to its conservative base. Whether that will work for them, who knows? I think it's probably exciting either way, that we've got a whole new bunch of people to deal with in government and an opposition that is looking very different.
Well, yeah, actually, just on that, who's your pick for the poison chalice? Who's going to take over the leadership of the Liberal Party?
I think the rumblings are, and it's not quite rumblings, it's people quite saying as well, that Peter Dutton is looking to take over the opposition leader role. There doesn't really look like any contenders in the moderate or the more centre-right of the party. So Karen Andrews has sort of kept her future open as well. She's probably doing the numbers, seeing if she has enough support. But obviously, given that the Teals wiped out a lot of the Liberal Party's moderate MPs, it sort of happened on both sides. Some Conservatives also might get wiped out, including Michael Sucker and obviously Zed Seldjer. But it is going to be very interesting to see which way the Liberal Party goes. The Conservative right factions within the party have said the reason they lost is because they weren't right enough, that they, to quote Matt Canavan, experimented with socialism and it didn't work out for them. And obviously the sort of more moderates like Simon Birmingham have said that the reason they lost is because they lost those heartland seats, the blue ribbon inner city electorates to Teals, and that's because they had lurched too far to the right and weren't able to overcome sort of the sort of impasse they were at with climate change and the Integrity Commission. So, the Liberal Party is going to do a lot of soul searching, and depending if Dutton does win, it means that the party will sort of lurch to the right, and whether that will be a winnable position for them at the next election. My take right now is that seems unlikely, but it doesn't look like any of the moderate or centre-right factions will be able to hustle together a leader at this point, given that Frydenberg is out.
Well, it's just for laughs, I'd love to see Peter Dutton get it. I think... we'd all be running short on material if Peter Dutton, if Mr. Potato Head doesn't get the leadership. So I'm rooting for him on this odd occasion.
Well, yeah, that's it. It sort of reminds me of the Tony Abbott versus Rudd versus Gillard era, where you've got sort of this very conservative opposition leader. And Abbott, despite all his failings, was a very successful opposition leader. He was less successful as a prime minister. There's sort of a reminder of what happened with the Abbott government. Maybe Dutton will be very effective as an opposition leader, but if he does actually win, who knows whether he'll be able to maintain the prime ministership. But that's 4 years down the track.
Yeah, can't see that one getting over the line. Yeah. Sarah, thank you so much for taking time out of your day off today to join us on The Record. And, well, congratulations on your work over the last month, and look forward to hearing from you in a couple of weeks' time.
Yeah, I look forward to having a good sleep, and I'll chat to you in a fortnight.
Thank you very much, Sarah. That is Sarah Basford-Canal. She's the political correspondent, federal political correspondent for the Canberra Times, catching us there on her day off in Canberra.